speaking today with Letitia Ablaza, who is running for Houston City Council, District I. Letitia, thank you for talking to me today. Why are you running for the office?
Well, thank you, first of all, Charles, for meeting me here today. I am running for City Council because I feel that I'm the most qualified candidate for this district. I've been living here for over 30 years. Not originally from the district. I'm originally from Mexico, but my family and I came to Houston when back in the late 70s. Went to elementary school, middle school, and graduate. Went to South Medidi in Milby High School, and went on to graduate from the University of St. Thomas with finance and economics degree. And I feel that City Council is, we should elect people that are from the community, that have been living in the community, and know exactly what's going on. I feel like have a good balance of not just community expertise, but also private industry, and knowing what our businesses need in this area.
Now, you spent about 4 months, I believe, as the Chief of Staff to Councilmember Helena Brown. Tell me about that experience and what you learned from it.
It was definitely an opportunity of a lifetime for me because I wanted to get inside City Council and find out how everything worked. District A is completely different from District I in that the demographics are different, issues are different. However, the city departments are different, and I was able to make some pretty good connections there with not just our elected officials, our at-large council members, but also the city departments that are there. There was an issue that came. There's several issues that came up. One of them being the Chapter 8 mechanic ordinance that was going to be some overregulation to some of our mechanics, and also was going to affect our not just small mom and pop shops, but also the consumers with our prices and how we were going to be dealing with those issues. So when we found out about it, and I found out about it, we got on the phone and started calling the local area mechanic and body shop owners and finding out what it was that they felt was important and if there was anything that we could do to help. And we wanted their way in more than anything else. So I created a team of people when I came into Councilmember Brown's office of a research team, because as I'm sure you probably know, there's an average of about 40 to 50 agenda items that pass through the city council that no one knows about the majority of the time. So what we did was we created a team of people that did research from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. that consisted of legal students doing their internships and communicated with the public about what was going on inside the city and what it is that they thought was important, if we should pass these ordinances, if some of these things were going to be effective, and more importantly, if we weren't going to be making people's lives better, we certainly shouldn't make them worse.
Okay. What do you see as the top priorities in District I, and what will be your priorities if you are elected?
District I feel, is on the cusp right now of having a serious economic boom here. I think that a lot of people keep asking the question, why do we keep getting looked over? Where I know it's a District I incorporates a big section of the city, and for some odd reason, we get left behind on a lot of things. There's a lot of economic development going on, and we feel that it's going to continue to go forward with that. And more importantly, the private industry that is opening up here, we want to make our, I think one of my priorities is that I want to make sure that the people that live here have first dibs at those jobs, because we can talk about jobs all day long and how we're creating jobs, but what percentage of the people that live here actually have those jobs? And I can tell you without a shadow of a doubt, me going out there talking to the constituents every single day like I am today, we do not have jobs in this district that fall in line with what's being created here. So we want to make sure that people have an opportunity, a shot at those jobs, so that we can expand the tax base here and create more of a disposable income, so that we can have things like bowling alleys and theaters and family-oriented type of things that used to exist in this district that don't have gone away. Along with that, also, be able to nurture some of the business development that is being created. Because currently what I'm getting is that a lot of the minority business owners feel that a lot of the regulations that are coming forth, they feel that it's basically putting them out of business and deterring them from opening up business here. And so when you've got options like going to Pearland or Pasadena or any other place, they're going to take those options rather than staying here in the city where they feel it's not friendly to them.
Now, you ran for District I 2 years ago, and I think the issue that motivated you to run was the historic preservation ordinance that was passed back in 2011. Looking back on it now, 2 years later, what has been the effect of this in the district and in the city, and has it been what you thought it would be when you first campaigned 2 years ago?
Well, definitely. Thank you for bringing that up. In 2011, I did run, and I was a last-minute filer with less than $5,000 and less than 8 weeks to campaign, and I got a pretty chunk of the vote. It was, actually it was close to 40%. I know others reported that it was less than 30%, but it was actually close. It was more than that. And it was by no accident. I think that people wanted their voices to be heard. As far as the historic district is concerned, I think that was just one of many things that was going on in the district. We had crime going through the roof, infrastructure obviously that needs to be repaired, and we needed time and resources to be focused on those issues as well. And so, as far as the historic districts are concerned, they're here. I certainly, welcome any community that wants to do them to make sure that we abide by the regulations and that there are, that we do have things in place that are going to make them successful.
Okay. What is your view of the city's financial situation at this time? As you know, a couple of years ago, the city had to pass a budget that cut a lot of programs, laid a lot of people off. Finances have generally improved. A lot of the services have been restored. What is your view, big picture, at this time?
Well, one of the things that I think the city is doing a bad job of is going after its debt that's owed to them. And I think that the city needs to focus in on that, number one. Number two, I know you mentioned that there are a lot of things have been restored, but, we're always, District I being one of the poorest districts in the city, we're one of the last ones to get attention, unfortunately. And so we want to make sure that the monies that are being spent in this district are being spent wisely, and that, every dollar that we're getting in here, that, we're making it stretch. Yes, there have been layoffs, and at the same time, people feel that their water bills are going through the roof, and we're not getting any relief. And I know that there was poor communication in trying to explain that just because the minute we start paying into the drainage fee, that our streets were not going to be fixed the next day. But when you hear reports of that money being used for other things other than its intended the intended purposes, then people get disingenuous about, what they're actually getting, paying into, and they're not seeing their return on investment right now. Not to mention, we have a lot of senior citizens in this area that are on fixed incomes, and I'd like to give them some relief on that because of their water bills going through the roof and also their drainage fees. I'd like to propose a charter amendment that would actually help alleviate some of that burden that they currently have, because $10, $15 may not seem a lot to us here, but it is a lot to someone who's on a fixed income or could, or is disabled.
In discussions of Houston's finances, often a subject that often comes up is the pension funds. As you know, Mayor Parker has been trying to get a bill passed in the legislature that would subject the firefighters' pension fund to meet and confer requirements. They fought against that and so far have prevailed. Do you agree with the pursuit of a law to subject the firefighters to meet and confer requirements as the police and municipal pensions are?
No, I do not.
Okay. Related to the historic preservation ordinance, the city made some changes to Chapter 42, its density ordinance this year, designed to encourage more dense development, not just inside the loop, but elsewhere in the city. What's your view of the changes that were made to Chapter 42, and where do you see opportunities for changes or improvements to it?
Well, as a city is obviously growing, we certainly want to make sure that we have things in place to be able to accommodate that growth. At the same time, my biggest concern right now is our infrastructure and how we're going to be able to keep up with that, because we need to make sure that the foundation is a good foundation, that we're not building on something that could crumble. Aside from that, I don't want to get too much into the weeds of Chapter 42 because people sometimes get lost, but I always refer back to the, each community is different, each subdivision is different, and there's some subdivisions that are okay with it and there's others that are not, and we want to make sure that those that are, that, their deed restrictions are in effect and that they are being that they are being honored, I guess is the right word, because currently what I'm hearing is that there's a lot of civic clubs that are concerned that their deed restrictions, this Chapter 42 will trump their deed restrictions and historic districts as well. So that's a concern to me, because it is a concern to them, and we want to make sure that we keep the character of our city and our subdivisions to what the community wants them to be.
You mentioned infrastructure and the drainage fee a few times, so Renew Houston, now Rebuild Houston, is the primary vehicle for street and drainage repairs. What's your view of how it is going so far?
Well, unfortunately, I don't see, in our community, we have some serious issues. It's one of the oldest, District I has one of the oldest infrastructures in the city, and I can tell you, walking it, I mean, I live half a mile away from here. My parents still have ditches where they live, and it's an issue. We need relief. We need it for it to come, you know, we need to see where the main areas of this district are having issues, and they be addressed immediately. I know that there's been other projects across the city that, in my humble opinion, were not anywhere near detrimental as to what we have here that have gotten attention. And of course, a lot of people feel that because, you know, they are under, you know, a certain income level that they're not going to be heard. And that's something that that we need to make sure that we are addressing in this area, for instance.
I mean, District I, you know, it's a big, diverse district. There's some old established neighborhoods and there's some areas that are in transition from, you know, being industrial or just otherwise basically empty to being kind of hot properties east of downtown in particular. You know, as these neighborhoods develop and as, you know, construction comes in, new people move in, you know, how do you balance the needs and concerns of established residents in neighborhoods, especially people who bought, you know, inexpensive houses years ago and are seeing their property values go up? How do you balance their concerns with, you know, the desire of developers to develop and neighborhoods to grow?
Well, you know, and I think that that's a great question, and there's a fine balance, and you need to make sure that, you know, we have citizens that are informed, and if they want to, you know, just, you know, if there's an issue that they want to be able to keep their area a certain way, well, then they need to have their voices heard, and we need a representative that's going to be there for them as well. Now, of course, you know, you can't stop development from happening, but you want to make sure that it's responsible development and it's going to, you know, listen to the needs of the community as well.
District I also includes downtown, and as you know, mobile food truck vendors came before city council a few months ago to ask about getting the ordinance change that would allow them to operate downtown, where they're currently not able to do. That wasn't taken up at the time, but it is certain to come up again. Do you support the efforts of mobile food vendors, food truck vendors, to change an ordinance that would allow them to operate downtown?
Well, I certainly support entrepreneurship. At the same time, we need to make sure that it's fair. And currently, my understanding is we only have two city inspectors that are going out there, because my main concern is health and safety issues for the people that are eating from these food trucks. And we want to make sure that, you know, that there are regulations, that they are abiding by the same regulations that other restaurants and eateries are abiding by. At the same time, you know, I don't... We want to make sure that we are being fair with the industry as overall. I think that there needs to be guidelines and there needs to be some rules in place just to make sure that, you know, we're not infringing on other eateries in the area.
Okay. In 2001, the voters in Houston passed a charter amendment that forbade the city from offering domestic partner benefits to its employees. World's a different place now. A number of cities in Texas do offer this kind of benefit, sometimes called plus one, where you can add someone to your health insurance who isn't a spouse. If there is a movement in Houston to get a charter to overturn this charter amendment and allow the city to offer these benefits to its employees, is that something you would support?
Absolutely. I would want to, you know, have a series of town hall meetings and make sure where my district stands on that and make sure that I'm a voice for them, yes.
Okay. I'm asking everybody, who are you supporting for mayor this November?
I'm staying in my own race. To me, it doesn't matter whether it's this mayor or the next mayor. We have to be able to build relationships and make sure that, you know, we get things done. And our district is a district that is very diverse. Of course, it's majority Hispanic. And we need someone that's going to represent this district that, you know, knows the community, knows the language, knows the culture, knows what it is that we're going through out here. And at the same time, be able to bridge that gap with whether it's Mayor Parker or, because obviously she only has one more term left, the next mayor for the next two terms. So I think that, you know, Mayor Parker has had a lot of challenges. And at the same time, we want to make sure that the person that's there to represent this district is going to work well with any mayor that's going to be there.
And when people go to vote, why should they vote to make you the next council member in District I and not one of your opponents?
Well, like I mentioned, I'm the only one in this race that actually has been living in the community, owns property in the community. My kids go to school in the district. We go to church in the district. I have a huge family that lives here in the district. We have family businesses. And at the same time, I have the educational background to, you know, be able to bring that private and public experience that I have. I'm currently an operations manager to a small commercial real estate investment firm that mainly deals with property and development in Lafayette and Round Rock right now. And I feel that, you know, their District I is on the cusp on some, you know, great potential, and we need to make sure that the person that is there is going not to just be here for 6 years and then leave or run the risk of them leaving, but actually seeing the things that are going to be put in place, you know, get nurtured and followed through, because as you know, we only have 6 years. And I think that's a lot of fear of people that is an outsider coming in and coming in here for their own personal interests and benefits and not that of the community. And the other thing that I'd like to do as well is, you know, just really stop all of this, you know, political bashing and backlash. I really want to turn this into a positive thing, because I feel that people have been discouraged from voting out here because of that, and that has hurt us more than anything. We need to get the voting numbers up, and we need to make sure that we get more people involved in the process, more people going to the voting polls, because right now we have over 200,000 residents that live in this district, and out of those 200,000, we've got about 90,000 that are registered, and out of those 90,000, you have, you know, probably 6,000 or 7,000 to come out and vote on a city election for their district council member and mayor. And I just feel that that's not representative of what is out here. And so we need to make sure that we don't discourage people from voting, to stop the intimidation tactics, get more people involved, because I think that the more people that are involved and that are weighing in on what is going on, makes us better leaders.
All right. Leticia Blasen, thank you very much for talking to me today.